invitation of the Myers Automotive Group, we say hello to Pierre Maguire from the NHL on NBC. How are you this morning, Pierre?
JR, Sean, I'm doing fantastic. Thank you.
Morning,
excellent.
Pierre.
Good. Pierre, what do you think we're going to... So this executive board that's voting right now, voting last night, maybe voting today, what do you think we'll hear from them? Do you think the 31 team reps will just vote, or do you think eventually... This might end up as something that each and every of the 700-odd players in the NHL are going to vote on this proposal.
I got to think each and every player is going to voice their opinion to their representative, and then you go forward from there. This is a different one. This isn't one of those one-size-fits-all kind of solution, especially when you consider the pod system and the fact that players may be gone from home for 2 to 3 months, depending, maybe even a little bit longer. There's a lot of stuff that has to be sorted out. And so I would imagine that every single player that's a card-carrying member of the association will have a say in this. Whether it works out or not, I don't know. But I have to believe some players have gone on the record and said, not for me. And other guys have said, yeah, I want to play. So I can't think that it's going to be unanimous instantaneously.
As we started with the 24-team format, the play-in is nothing more than finishing off kind of a reconfigured regular season to kind of the top dogs playing each other, Pierre. Do you think the players will be looking for any compensation for that?
Good question. Don't know the answer to that. These are different times. I mean, more likely than not, we all know that the players, up until their last pay period, were made whole. And so they have they decide whether they want to take their last pay period or not because of escrow and everything else. It's an accounting equation and a financial compensation equation, too. But, the players don't get – this is for the fans so they understand. The players don't get paid in the playoffs. They never have. Once the regular season's over, the players are playing for whatever, financial status they can get by winning games. And usually that is a bonus check at the end if you win the cup. But it's a different equation in the playoffs, as you know, Sean, and it's not exactly what everybody thinks. So this will be an interesting one for everybody to talk about.
A minor aspect of all of this, but with, in all likelihood, no fans in the stands, so no revenue in terms of that. And I think they've said as much as 30 and 40% of revenues in the NHL are brought by fans. Would the amount of money the players who eventually do win the Stanley Cup and those that lose, I mean, is that going to remain the same, do you think? Or might that even go down?
That's a great question. I don't know the answer to that.
Because it's a good chunk of change, right, to win the Cup?
It's substantial. I mean, when we won it, we got $35,000 1 year back in 91 and $50,000 in 92. But it's gone up significantly since then, obviously. It's well over $100,000 now if you win. So it's pretty significant. And the loser share has grown exponentially as well. So it's both sides get compensated when they get to the final in particular. But no, I don't know the answer to that. That's a very good question.
To that, Pierre, I guess for a player that's making $6 million, what's the average salary now, over $3 million?
Mm-hmm.
Is $100,000 to stay in a hotel for 2 months? Now, for the cup is what you usually play for, but the financial component to relative to what you guys were making or the players were making in 91-92, it's really not that big of a deal for a lot of guys. Right?
No, well, that's what we were talking about before, exactly, and that's why I said nobody really knows. This is a different compensation formula because, again, just so everybody understands, players don't get paid in the playoffs. And so this is I think everybody's counting on, oh, they're going to vote to come back 100%. I don't know if they are or they aren't. I don't know because of the compensation factor.
Yeah, last year, 25 players split $3.75 million, so it's about $150,000 per player.
Now, the idea of the hub cities is still out there as well, Pierre, and they're kind of whittling down the numbers. Do you think at the end of the day the players will care where they end up playing?
Yes, I do. I really do. If you're going to be locked into a place for 2 to 3 months, it'll matter where you are. Sean made some really good points earlier in the week when we actually broke this story on this network. And one of the things he talked about was, hey, they're going to have quality hotels, totally agree, check mark number one. Quality restaurants, check mark number two. Golf course availability, check mark number three. I mean, there's a lot that has been brought up that they're going to have to answer in all these different hub cities. I know everybody's anxious to find out where the hub cities are going to be and are the players coming back, but there are a lot of things that they have to go over. not every city is going to meet the criteria, I don't believe.
Well, and again, a complaint, of course, for an NHL player is Winnipeg, sure, it's nice in the summer. What's it like in February? If it's between Edmonton and Vegas and I'm going from a hotel to a rink to a golf course, I know optically, but if everything's closed, is there really that big of a difference between most of the NHL cities?
I don't know if everything will be closed by the time they come back. That's the thing.
But would the players also, and I brought this up earlier, Pierre, like if it is Vegas, am I strolling around the strip or am I supposed to be in quarantine?
Don't know the answer.
Yeah.
This is all new to all of us. And from my understanding, from the way it was shared to me, once you're in the pod, you stay in the pod. You can't leave. So I've got to believe that there's going to be certain areas you can go and certain areas you can't go.
The Premier of Alberta, Jason Kenney, has he's been very forthright on really pitching this hard and pitching it publicly as well. One of the things that he's brought up is the fact that Edmonton, I believe, of all the major cities in North America, has the lowest rate of COVID-19 cases of any of the major cities, and he considers that to be a selling factor, as it were.
Why wouldn't it be? Absolutely. I don't blame him at all for presenting it that way. I also read that they would be more than prepared to have a golf course ready for the players. They have, obviously more than enough quality hotels and easy access to the downtown building, which, it works in their favor. They have more than enough practice facilities, so I could see how they'd think that they were a viable candidate, no question. One of the things that I think, and again, I don't know enough about it in terms of how it would be presented by the league, but I have to think at some point taxation issues would kick in, and that's something that I got to believe the agents are thinking about, the PA's thinking about, and the league's thinking about. If you're going to be in these kinds of locales for a long enough period of time, I would imagine that some sort form of taxation is going to be engaged as well.
If they do, one of the things that was brought up yesterday, that if, hey, Edmonton's hosting, then Edmonton would not be playing in Edmonton. Do you like that? And is it realistic if Edmonton was to be there that you're going to be able to keep and monitor the players to stay in a hotel? Like, you're basically going to lock them down like a jail and there's no way they can go home?
Yeah, no, I think it'd be really tough. But we've seen it before. Montreal Canadiens for years and years and years, once the playoffs started, put players in hotels, and they stayed there. And, I can tell you through my experiences, the first year, players stayed in the hotel, and then we became a little bit more lenient as an organization the second year, and it was just before games. So players had the choice. They could stay there the whole time or just do it the night before a game. And most of the guys took their option and just chose to come the night before the game. So every situation's different, but this has gone on before in the National Hockey League in terms of players being sequestered during the playoffs. That's happened before, and it really hasn't been a problem.
All right, well, we'll presumably find out more on this throughout the weekend, and it'll be a talking point for us on Monday. We had Marco Rossi on the show earlier this morning, Pierre, from his home in Austria. He yesterday was named the most valuable player in the Ontario Hockey League for this past year. Had a terrific year, 120 points, led all of the CHL. One of the things we talked to him about was he said he's been interviewed by, I think, what did he say, 16, Simmer?
Yeah.
Teams?
Yeah.
Various general managers, of course, because he'll be a high, high pick.
Yep.
And Simmer brought up the idea of are they talking to you about, in terms of your conditioning, the fitness, are you doing, is there anything you're showing them? Like, your son is kind of going through this as well. I don't know if you want to put cards on the table. Like, what sorts of things, conditioning-wise, are general managers and heads of scouting asking prospective draftees?
What are you doing right now? Describe your daily process. What are you eating? How many days a week are you training? How many hours a day are you training? That kind of question has been asked. I know I can't speak for all the players, but I know that that's been asked.
But they're not asking for, hey, visual evidence of anything,
We haven't gone through that. No,
yeah.
No
okay.
Pose downs? Hey?
That's good.
It wouldn't end up happening. I've got to think, and again, some guys try to get a little too fancy or too tricky, but some have to be trying to gauge in the essence of handling the pressure and the mental aspect, probably asking some of the athletes how they're handling that.
Yes, I would say, well, I can just speak again from what's gone on around here. The answer is yes. How are you handling it? What are you doing? How is school going? I think it's an example of mental strength and dedication and focus and determination and all those things. But I'm sure that most of the people that are doing the interviews are asking questions that are pretty close to what you just asked.
Are you off camera writing answers down
on
pieces of paper?
I don't go anywhere near. In fact, the interviews that Ryan's done he's been in his bedroom, and he's got a desk in his bedroom, and he does them there. And We're usually out of the house.
Yeah, how long do they typically last? I know it can be all over the map.
45 minutes to an hour.
Wow. And you think about, you know, and listen, we're talking about, you know, most teams have, what, upwards of 150 players maybe on their list that they would consider?
Yeah, I would say at least that many.
So yeah. If you're interviewing, you know, we talk about, well, what have you been doing for 2 months? If you're heads of scouting and regional scouts or whatever, what have you been doing? Boy, that becomes a long process. You're talking 45 minutes per player times 150.
Yeah, usually, though, what they do is they break it up by area. So if you're the guy in New England, you've got the New England player. If you're the guy in Minnesota, you've got the Minnesota players. If you're the guy in Ontario doing the OHL, you've got that. So they break it up, if you follow my logic there. Usually more, I can't speak for every team, but the teams that my son has spoken to, it's been that way.
What has to be very tricky, guys, behind the scenes, especially with the Russian players back in the day, every one of them was assigned an interpreter by the National Hockey League, right? They're not going into these interviews trying to speak English. And in the case of Rossi, hey, the English is fine, and I think he's a fairly simple guy. Would you, if you're using a high pick, not want somebody to probably interview him in German just to get a little better
Absolutely.
Feel in his natural language?
Love it. I think that's a really good point. And somebody that you trust, whether it's a local scout of yours or somebody that you know that speaks that language, absolutely 100% agree with that.
Pierre, on this day in 2000, 20 years ago today, Alpo Suninen was hired by the Chicago Blackhawks. He became the first European-born head coach, modern day, in the National Hockey League. There is no one right now that's doing the job. Why don't you think that NHL teams have reached over to Europe to hire head coaches?
I think part of it is the amount of games. It's a different kind of schedule in Europe compared to here. I think there might be potentially sometimes a language barrier dealing with the media, I think, can be a problem. The type of hockey that's played in Europe compared to the type of hockey that's played here. Alpo was really good friends with Mike Smith, and I think that's one of the things that helped him get first to Winnipeg, obviously, and secondly to Chicago when Mike was there. So that helped him a lot. And, you know, Alpo's a good hockey person, very, very good. Language wasn't really an issue for him. And his friendship, obviously, in relationship with Team Mussolini didn't hurt him either when he went to Winnipeg. So there's a lot there. But I would say more times than not, I think it's a length of schedule. It's a different kind of hockey. And sometimes people worry about translation in terms of, speaking to the media in particular.
We're almost 30 years in, Pierre, as far as a real transition to European players. Are you a little surprised, though, that a former player has not circled back?
Well, that's the one. Yeah, that's the one that is a little bit surprising. I'll give you an example. I think Alexander Steen, should he choose to get into coaching, would make a tremendous coach. Not a little bit good, really good. He's just that kind of a player. He's a selfless guy. He's a very determined, intelligent, hardworking player.
But he was born in Winnipeg, like Ralph Kruger.
Yeah, I get it. But
no, I know.
But he played a lot over in Sweden, and yeah. You know, he's a proud Swede. I think he'd be a guy that would make a tremendous, tremendous coach.
You touched on Mike Smith, and I love talking to Mike, and certainly was a different cat when it comes to general managers. Was he maybe a little ahead of his time?
I think so, especially when it came to the Russian players and the way he tried to cultivate them, and some of the things he did with his draft picks. I think it was Todd Harchie that they drafted in Winnipeg, a Harvard player, and they sent him over to play in Russia before there was a KHL. And Harchie wrote a tremendous book about his experiences over there. Never really translated to the NHL, but he was a big guy who could really play the game at the college level in particular. I also had the privilege of coaching Brian Marchment, who was drafted by Winnipeg. And Brian and a lot of their prospects at the time were sent over to Finland and Sweden to train in the off season. So Mike was probably a bit ahead of his time, no question.
On this day in 2002, we are introduced to Mike Babcock for the first time as an NHL coach, hired by the Anaheim Mighty Ducks. Pierre, he can sit at home for four more years and count his money from the Toronto Maple Leafs if he wants to. Do you suspect we'll see him in the NHL back sooner rather than later? Or is he going to pick and choose to be in the right spot?
Well, I think he's got first of all, it's going to take a general manager that really believes in him and an owner that is not afraid to write the check. So that's two things that'll have to change for him. In terms of where the job market is. But I think the biggest thing is I think he's learned a lot, too. One of the things Mike's really good at is the debrief. I think he learned a lot of that from Hockey Canada. And so he'll debrief, I'm sure, about what went right and what went wrong in Toronto and try to fix those things. I know Ken Hitchcock did that, and it worked really well for him. I think John Tortorella's done that, and it's worked out fantastically well for him. So I think Mike, who really for the first time in his career got kicked in the teeth in Toronto, probably had to do the same exercise and probably has, and he's a very intelligent person. I think he'll eventually get another chance. I don't know about how much he can pick and choose, though.
Yeah, and if I'm the Seattle franchise, I'm trying to sell the game. I don't really care that he necessarily coached in Spokane, but he's a talker and pretty good face to it. Would that make some sense for Seattle, an expansion team?
That's the first team I thought that would probably try to reach out and hire him. The other part of it is not just a Spokane connection. Mike is really respectful of Jacques Lemaire. And one of the things that Jacques Lemaire did that I thought was, and he was a tremendous coach. I coached against him. Jacques Lemaire is an amazing coach. When he left New Jersey and went to Minnesota with an expansion team, he really got that thing up and running. And that's a heck of a mark you can leave on an organization. If you take over as a coach the first time and you're working with it right from the ground up with nobody else's mistakes, it can really be beneficial. And I think Jacques had a tremendous time coaching there in Minnesota. I know he loved his time there, and I could see him having a talk with Mike about maybe going to Seattle, but I don't know if Seattle is prepared to hire him or not.
Of course, Ron Francis is the GM in Seattle. He was heavy into the analytics side in Carolina and has gone heavy into it in Seattle as well. It's probably going to have a large part of you know, the players that they bring in. And I'm presuming, Pierre, if it involves the players, you're going to have a coach as well who's a big believer in analytics in Seattle, correct?
I would imagine.
Yeah.
Would it tend
to be a based, you know, is it are younger coaches maybe more open to that than maybe a guy who's been established for a long time?
Some are, some aren't, depending on where you go. But I can just tell you it would be interesting to see whether an older guy would be more prepared to do that. Considering that most of the teams that have gone straight analytics have not been successful. And now they've started to tweak it a little bit away from that. They still utilize analytics, don't get me wrong, but they're not going full-on analytics in terms of just eviscerating their scouting staff and not having boots on the ground. And I think that's something, again, you need to pay attention to and do a lot of historical studying to see the teams that went straight analytics and what has actually paired out for them, because it hasn't really worked out for any of them.
If you were interviewing for that Seattle job, first of all, you know, talk your way into the job, would you be trying to temper expectations? And I know you can't flat out say it, but listen, bud, what you're seeing in Vegas ain't happening here for probably 3 to 5 years?
Well, I think Ronnie's already done that as a general manager, so I think that's important. I think the ultimate message is, what's your vision for how the team has to play? That's number one in Seattle. What's your style of play? Number two, what type of players would you need? And see if that meshes with the general manager's philosophy. And I think the third thing is, how do you communicate with the community as a new coach? Because there are going to be some major pitfalls there. So are you going to be a bombastic person in the media? Or are you going to be a very positive person and try to sell the message of the organization? I think those are three things that are really going to matter there.
All right, we're going to end the day and the week with this. It's our Tool and Equipment Store web poll question, Pierre. We're going to put it to you. There's the big charity golf event happening on Sunday with Tiger and Phil and Peyton Manning and Tom Brady. Mm. And so our question is this, and you're not playing golf. You're just going out for a couple of beers on the patio, socially distanced, of course. Of the four guys playing on Sunday, which guy would Pierre McGuire want to go and have beers with of those four guys? You're not playing golf. You're just having beers.
No, I get it.
Telling tall tales. Tiger, Phil, Peyton Manning, or Tom Brady?
I would say Brady.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
No, you're with Simmer on that one. Because what do you want to bend his ear about? What do you want to hear from Tom Brady?
I want to know about what it was like to be a sixth-round pick in the NFL and find out what you had to do to be so successful. I'd want to find that out because, you know, clearly a lot of teams didn't think you had what it took to do it. And so how much did he use that as fuel? And then find out about the legacy that is Bill Belichick. You know, I've read a tremendous book. I don't know if you guys have seen it. It's a great book. I just want to find out the author. Ian O'Connor wrote it. It's about Bill Belichick.
Oh, yeah.
Phenomenal, phenomenal read. Really good read.
All right, well, we'll put in the request. We'll see how it goes, okay? You'll have to fight off Simmer
for
him.
Speaking of that, though, I can just tell you this. Last year, I had a chance to play golf in Boston at the country club in Brookline, and Tom Brady used to live on one of the holes there.
Yep.
And so the caddy would say to me, oh, you see that house there? I said, yeah. He says, "That's their workout room." I said, "No way." He says, "Oh yeah, that's their workout and yoga room."
Did they have the for sale sign up on the fence that faced the golf course as well?
Or
no, not quite. Was that $39 million or something?
It's pretty substantial. Yeah.
All good. All right. Listen, thanks for the time, and not only today but this week. Enjoy the weekend down there in Connecticut and Boston, and look forward to chatting with you again next week.
Thanks a lot, Jared. Thanks a lot, Sean. Have a great weekend, everybody. Be safe and enjoy the weather. Take care.